You're listening to Greater LA. It's KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And we as faith leaders within this community have come today to make it known that we are appalled at the actions of the Minneapolis Police Department as it relates to...
Community leaders in the Watts area of South Los Angeles say they are angered by the police killing of George Floyd. And they gathered in Watts at the Labor Community Action Committee yesterday to tell their communities that despite that anger, they are worried that disruptive demonstrations may come to their neighborhood. They say they remember how their area was ravaged in 1992, the LA uprising, and they do not want to see that happen again.
And so we want to say to the nation that here in this community, we're not going backward. We're not going back to 1965. We're not going back to 1962. We worked too hard and we worked too long to bring Watts to where it is today. And we will not go back. We will not go back. We will not go back.
That was Pastor Robert Taylor of Beulah Baptist Church in Watts. And KCRW's Jerome Campbell was there, and he's with me right now. Hey, Jerome.
Hey, Steve.
So the Watts community obviously is no stranger to riots. You heard the pastor mention 1965. That was a big uprising, obviously. What exactly happened there they're so scared of seeing again?
Well, specifically, it's two things. They don't want to see looting in their neighborhood, and they don't want to see jobs leave the neighborhood. They talked about how the community has had to rebuild after these two uprisings, and that hasn't been easy for them. Donnie Huber is the vice president of the Watts Gang Task Force, and he says one of the worst parts of the 92 uprising was the fallout of the local economy. He says many Black residents in Watts lost their jobs because business owners couldn't afford to reopen their stores.
How many of you know that our grandparents and all our ancestors worked for these buildings, worked for these grassroots organizations, worked for these grassroots stores, and they losing them like that? Y'all stop the looting. Let's start changing policy, and let's get in there and vote in November.
Yeah. L.A. City Councilman Joe Boscaino was also there, and Watts is in his district, and he talked about how job loss affects communities when there's civil unrest.
When you loot, a store's corporate headquarters will move on, but the clerk, the security guard, the manager, those who live in our community will lose the most.
Hey, Jerome, are they against the protests happening all over town in general because it's getting out of hand? Or are they just saying, hey, this looting's got to stop?
So yes and no. There's a lot of tension for this community. These people lived in the moment when Rodney King was beaten by LAPD officers. Some of them even say that they knew him. But they're also older now, and they aren't in the streets anymore. But they do understand what the younger generation is feeling and doing. They just don't want to see their community destroyed. Here's Huber again.
We done been in the 65 riot, we done been in 92 riot, and we still don't get it? We still haven't seen what would happen, but now you have a whole different animal in front of you. You got a whole bunch of young people are real upset. Oh no, we're not for all the looting and all stuff like that. But we are tired of dying in the streets like animals.
What kind of action do they want to be taken?
Well, they want to see job creation. For them, the issues of police brutality and Black empowerment include protesting the death of George Floyd, but it's also about getting at some of the underlying issues, such as unemployment. At the meeting yesterday, about half an hour was spent talking about a federal jobs bill. Here's Shane Scott, senior pastor at Macedonia Baptist Church in Watts.
The cities that have been hit hardest, let's push for a federal job guarantees bill. Brother pastors who are standing with me today, let's not let them come to our churches unless they commit to pushing for federal job guaranteed bills. Let's rebuild the infrastructure of these yet to be United States of America.
Scott and many of the community leaders want to see this change. Yes, it does not directly respond to the killing of George Floyd, but they say it furthers what these protests are about, the advancement of Black life.
Obviously, there's a lot of emotion in all of this. Those pastors and the other community members remember the past, remember 1965, remember 1992. I want to thank you for your reporting. KCRW's Jerome Campbell, much appreciated.
Thanks, Steve.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Well, onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The outcries for change that you hear in the streets have long been at the center of work done by a group known as Second Call. It's a gang intervention organization that works in and around South LA. And heading it is former gang member himself, Skip Townsend. He now works as an interventionist trying to resolve conflict by working with gang members in the community of South LA. And he's here with us right now. Welcome back, Skip.
Hey, thank you for having me, Steve.
Have you been out in the streets protesting this week?
I have actually not been on the streets protesting. I have been on the streets doing other things, but it wasn't in the form of protesting or looting.
And I wonder, I mean, you're seeing all this violence. You're seeing the looting happening in the city. I mean, do you think that maybe that takes the movement a step backward instead of going forward?
I don't think it takes a step backwards. I think for me as a mature human being, I know it's the wrong way, but I think that this is the way that some people will show their anger, their grief, their pain, their loss. It is probably the worst thing in the world to be African-American and know that we are the less numbers, we are less likely to succeed, we are more likely to be shot, if not at the hands of each other, at the hands of law enforcement. I think it's a burden that lays on the body. So the release that these individuals are able to take, and let me just say that most of this release didn't come from them. Most of the people that started this didn't come from LA, and as the mayor of St. Paul said, didn't come from his community. So when we see these individuals who come with their military gear on and they incite the crowd, well, they're inciting the right crowd. They're inciting people who are emotional. And these emotional people will be the ones that will become running out of Target or out these stores. But someone has opened the door for them in that avenue as well.
You know, we've seen, I mean, with our own eyes, not only reports, but we've seen, you know, police in many cases are the ones escalating the situation. We heard from Black Lives Matter LA organizer Melina Abdullah yesterday, who said that the irony of these protests is that the folks are marching to stop police brutality. And the fact that in these peaceful marches, the protesters are actually facing police brutality. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
I think that's 100% right. And the thing that's not being addressed is the fear. There is a fear that most law enforcement agencies have with the communities they serve. There is a fear. So they respond to the community with that fear. So when we call for law enforcement to do a job for us, the first thing is they respond with officer safety first. So imagine that they're responding to community issues, but they're responding to officer safety first. And there is an opportunity that they may mismanage this call. They may mismanage the situation. So I think that's why protesting, whether it's violent or nonviolent, I think it does not answer the questions that are needed. I think that we need to dismantle the system, law enforcement, as well as the system that is in America, period, because it puts a class of people. Imagine being someone who is in fear every day because of being Black, that we will not get a fair shake in America, whether it's buying a car, whether it's when the police are called on us, whether it's when going to court, no matter what the situation is, or even renting an apartment. You know, we are systemically thinking to ourselves that we are not worthy, that something's going to happen. And, you know, that's a bad way to live. It's an emotional and mental trauma that we keep with us every day. And that's why it comes out in the violence that you guys see today.
Part of your work is focused on police relations, right? With the community, with members of the African-American community. And I trying to reform law enforcement practices, like, for example, mislabeling gang members in L.A. What do you make of the news today? The L.A. Police Commission president outlining steps that its panel will take immediately, reviews of police training procedures or doing more outreach in communities of color, things like that, revisions, drafting some revisions to policies just in the next couple of months. Do you think that's enough or it's even more than that?
I think it's even more than that because they're historically have always reached out to the pastors, the black churches. They have not reached out to the people who are hurting, those who don't express their pain. You know, they go to the people, the so-called leaders in the community, and the so-called leaders in the community might, you know, sit and have dinner with them and talk, and they take pictures. And, you know, they say, yeah, we've talked with the leaders in the African-American community, but they're not the real leaders. Those are the self-appointed leaders. And when they say outreach, you know, they often go to elementary schools. They do things and share a joy with a child, let him turn the sirens on a police car or something like that, or have a senior lead officer dress up and, you know, play with the kids. And no, it's not time to play with the kids. It's not time to go to church. It's time to really deal with those individuals that they don't like. It's time to go on the street corners, go to the parks, and talk to the people who they are most likely to arrest or most likely to have an officer-involved shooting with. They have to engage in that population. You can't run from it. It's the elephant in the room. They're running from it. And I don't think it's time to run.
While we're on the subject of LAPD and Chief Michael Moore, I have to bring this up. Chief Moore's comments last night about the death of George Floyd. I want to play. This was at a gathering, a news conference with the mayor and other folks at City Hall. Here's what Chief Moore had to say last night.
His death is on their hands as much as it is those officers. And that is a strong statement. But I must say that this civil unrest that we're in the midst of, we must turn a corner.
He's talking about protesters and looters, saying the death, specifically the looters too, but the death is on their hands as much as it is their officers. He walked those comments back afterward because it elicited an amazing response, a lot of criticism, especially on social media. He said, quote, looting is wrong, but it is not the equivalent of murder, and I did not mean to equate the two. I deeply regret and humbly apologize. That's what he said. Some critics, though, feel like the damage has been done. What's your impression of that, hearing that?
The way I took it is that the death is on our hands as if somehow, some way, the people of the city of Minneapolis are just as much as responsible as the police officers there. I didn't take it as if the looters and the guys rioting now are a part of that. But the one thing that I want to do is, you know, we always talk about whose life matter. You know, they say black lives matter, but then they say, well, blue lives and everyone's lives. But right now, blacks are systemically the ones who are always with the murders and the homicides that are at the hands of police officers.
There's a reason for the slogan, right?
It is. And right now, our lives are the ones who are under fire. So every life matters, but our lives, the black lives, are the ones who are under fire, under attack, and we cannot put that on the community. We cannot say that the community is responsible for being murdered by law enforcement. So I would take it as he's saying that blacks kill blacks. But, you know, what happens is they want to put us in a barrel like crabs in a barrel and say, well, look how you're acting. But this is not our natural inhabitant. So every time somebody says you're acting like crabs in a barrel, well, why would you put crabs in a barrel in the first place? They don't belong there. And how can you judge them for how they're acting in an environment that they don't belong in? We do not belong in a society where we are, I don't want to say harassed, but we have made contact with the police more than anyone else. The police make more contact with black people than they make with any other culture. And often or not, black people are killed, and then the killing is justified of the unarmed person based on what they believed was a threat or what they believed was happening. And this just is happening too many times to let us know the system is unfair. We cannot play with the kids. We cannot have church we need to sit down and have these discussions because we must change the system. And if the system doesn't change, then we're looking at maybe 2 years or 10 years before we're back to the same spot, same situation. So it's systemic. It is not based on one word, one police chief, one officer. It is a systemic problem that we have to address, and it has to be changed. It just has to be.
You didn't go out to the protests, you said. You did some other things. Are you recommending people to take this to the streets? Are you urging members in your group, Second Call, to be involved in other ways? You said it's not time for pictures, it's time for action. What kind of action are you talking about?
Had I organized a community, what I would have done is we would have went directly to City Hall and we would just peacefully sat and not allowed a door to open until we were addressed. And then our demands would be to have these conversations, talk about systemic change. That's what peaceful protest is. But after that, we have to have demands. And the demands cannot be to more community engagement. No, engage us right now, where we are right now. Let's stay in the moment. The moment is we are being killed. The moment is that this has happened with LAPD a number of times. It's happened all throughout the country. And let's address it. It might be some people who are angry and upset and emotional, and we just give them a moment. Says, okay, now you're done. Let's get back to what we need to do. And for us, I want to just say for LA, it has to be addressed with LAPD. It has to go into their trainings. It can't be any more training with law enforcement training law enforcement. It has to be more community training law enforcement on community issues and how to address community, how to deal with mental health, how to deal with substance abuse, how to deal with these issues that make them draw their guns and kill our community members. They are actually killing our children. They're killing our brothers and sisters. They're not killing criminals. We have to stop. We have to de-escalate the terminology. Suspect, get out the car. No, young man, young lady, I need you to step out the car. We have to change everything within the system. Everything.
And I want to thank you for talking to me today. Skip Townsend, who's the head of Second Call, a gang intervention organization that works in South LA. And thank you, Skip. I really appreciate it, man, for your words today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate you guys.
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
In downtown LA today, another march and protest, this time led by a group of Baptist ministers.
Where do we want it?
Now!
Where do we want
One of those ministers leading the march was the Reverend Welton Pleasant II. He's pastor of Christ Second Baptist Church, the oldest African-American church in the city of Long Beach. And I had the pleasure of speaking with him last night. Pastor Pleasant, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's good to be here.
I know the protests have been happening all over Greater LA, including in Long Beach we saw the other night, which also suffered some looting over the weekend. Are you and your church okay?
Yeah, the church is fine. We're in the community trying to make a difference and try to bring calm as much as possible. But fortunately, the church is okay.
Well, what's your personal reaction to all of this? The protests over the killing of George Floyd at the knee of that Minneapolis police officer, that horrific video that we all have seen now, but also the looting and the destruction that's taken place after it. L.A. obviously is no stranger to what's been happening, certainly no stranger to police violence as well among African-Americans. What's going through your head right now?
Well, several things. First of all, let's be clear. The spark of all of this is the result of the brutal murder of George Floyd. That is the spark of the violence and the rioting, which we do not condone. However, we do understand it was Dr. Martin Luther King who said rioting is the voice of the unheard. But he closed that quote out with a question. He says, what is America not hearing? And I think this situation is the apex of our anger. And unfortunately, it has resulted into some of the violence that we've seen, but at the same time, let's also be clear, much of the looting and the violence is not being perpetuated by those who are really protesting. They're outside agitators. And in a very real sense, we really believe that some of them are plants by the government that have been paid to do what they're doing. We know that's true through history because they did it in the civil rights movement. But most of the people, and I've been on the front line, I was out in LA on Saturday, I was in Long Beach last night, and most of the people did not even look like us. However, we got painted in the media as if it was us doing the looting. And that was not the case. Some of these people were driving high-end and expensive cars, putting stuff in their cars. It's almost like an organized crime that was going on. And that's what's really happening on the ground level.
Certainly history has shown us, and it's been proven that that the FBI certainly and federal agents weren't the biggest fans of Dr. King in the 1960s. And as you said, there were plants in the middle of some of those protests to make things even worse than they actually were. Do you have any evidence of that in today's setting and what we're seeing in the unrest and the looting and the destruction that's happening?
I'm an eyewitness of several situations where the people did not look like us and did not obviously come from our community. In fact, I understand that most people that was arrested didn't even live in Long Beach. Most of them was outside of the city. Some was even as far as Sacramento. 80% of the people that was arrested was not even residents of Long Beach.
You know, Dr. King said those words that you mentioned back in the 1960s. But I'll ask you in the year 2020, is America listening? And what is America hearing?
No, America is not listening. This is happening too often, too frequently. And honestly, we believe that this happened on an everyday basis. We are just coming to realization because it's being filmed. But the reality is police brutality is the callous of white supremacy that exists to exterminate black lives. And no, America is not hearing, and we are tired of it, and we do want our rage to end up in some results. Most of the people you talk to today really do not have hope in the judicial system when it comes to African Americans. It's too often we have seen this over and over, and it has not come out to our favor. And so we won't be satisfied until there is a conviction and jail, not just for the officer with the knee on the neck, but for all three other officers who were complicit in the situation.
You grew up in L.A., South Central. You got married in 1993, the year after the Rodney King unrest. That, of course, was the four police officers who were acquitted in Simi Valley. But the unrest was in South Central and, you know, maybe parts of Koreatown. I mean, just in that immediate area. And they didn't really boil around to the other parts of greater L.A. Some people are saying that we haven't learned anything in the 28 years since then. What do you say?
I agree. We have not learned. America have not learned this lesson, has not dealt with this original sin, which is the sin of racism. It's a pre-existing condition. And until we really develop some policies that will combat that, we're going to continue to be where we are. America needs to understand that there's a population that have been totally excluded from the mainstream economic base of society. And this is an issue that we got to deal with.
I know over the weekend, Pastor, that the churches were given the go-ahead to open.
Yes.
Limited capacity, of course. Some churches did. You and many of the black churches around L.A., though, decided to wait. Why did you wait, and why are you waiting?
We're waiting for several reasons. Number one, we're concerned as pastors, with the health of our parishioners. We will not put wealth before health. And I think, unfortunately, our government have made a decision to put profit over people. But my first responsibility is to my members. When you look at the African-American community, we are the most infected but the least tested. And we're concerned with the asymptomatic spread of this disease that can potentially impact our parishioners. So we're being very cautious as we try to re-enter into our sanctuary. Most of our churches are populated with older members who are very susceptible to this disease. And so we're going to listen to the health professionals and not the politicians.
You know, you mentioned that many of your parishioners are older people. The black church is obviously a center of activity during civil rights and during protests such as this. Are you in danger, do you think, of losing your place if younger people don't come to church?
There is a concern that we are dealing now with a new generation who is not necessarily familiar with the struggle of the civil rights movement and have their own understanding of where we are now in history. And there is a disconnect. But I think if we're going to reach them, we just can't be in the sanctuary. We got to get out in the streets. One of the unfortunate things about those who may be doing rioting and looting, we really don't have any type of connection with that group, and we have no control over them. And so I think this is going to be a challenge from the church, is that we need to move from our sanctuary into the streets. We need to know what's happening really in the community and understand some of the young people and what they're hearing.
Pastor Welton Pleasant II of Christ's Second Baptist Church in Long Beach. Sir, thank you so much for being with us, Pastor. I really appreciate the time you took for us.
Thank you for the opportunity. God bless.
What do we want?
Justice!
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Justice!
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Justice!
When do we want it?
Now!
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!